Come John Wilkerson, Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams, and we look forward to talking some NBA basketball. That'll be next segment. Also, looking forward to talking some Tennessee baseball. That'll be at the bottom of the hour, as we've got guests that'll help us do that. Tony Vitello later in the hour, and then John Michael joining us next. But right now, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6. So, Vince Ferrara, what is the incredible prize that is up for grabs this evening?
It's a winner receives a $25 gift certificate to Proper Popcorn. They're located at 9700 Kingston Pike, new location at 29 Market Square, and also at properpopcorn.com.
You can't beat it. That is for sure.
I went there just last week and stocked up. It's amazing.
It is. If you get the chance, try the cookies and cream popcorn.
Have not done that yet. There's so many selections, but yeah, that's one on the list.
Now. Yeah, the two that I've tried and will certainly be doing again, it was just the movie theater butter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Outstanding. So. And then also the cookies and cream. That was such a pleasant surprise. Oh, my goodness. But anyhow, let's get to the question. It's the oddest note, but unfortunately, it's the world we live in that when you look, Tom Satkoviak shared this. Tennessee basketball playing tonight in Nashville. The last note under the series information was three of the last five times the Vols traveled to Nashville, they returned home without playing. And again, that's just the unfortunate landscape that we've been in. Right. As you had a non-conference game, an SEC tournament game, and a regularly scheduled conference game that were highlighted in the three games where you traveled to Nashville, came home without ever getting on the floor, well, without playing. So the question is, in looking at Tennessee and Nashville, Tennessee's won four of its last six games in Nashville, all games played. Name the last three teams that Tennessee had, and those four wins represent three different opponents. So name the last three opponents, three different opponents that Tennessee's beaten in Nashville. Name the last three opponents, different opponents, that Tennessee has beaten in Nashville. 865-656-9900 to give us your guess. 865-656-9900. Outside the local area, 866-656-9900 is toll free. So why don't we get right to it and start with John. Hello, John.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Fine. And yourself?
Doing pretty good. I totally missed the question, though.
Okay. The question is, it's Tennessee, of course, has not been able to play each of its last few trips to Nashville. But in its last six games that it's played, Tennessee's won four, and those four victories have been marked against three opponents. Name the last three different teams that Tennessee has beaten in Nashville in basketball.
Gotcha. Okay, well, I'll go with Vandy.
That's off to a good start.
One. let's see. I want to say we played Memphis there. I'm not sure. Throw Memphis out there. And MTSU.
You got one correct. You were off to a good start. The game the game against Memphis did not take place. That was earlier this year. But, John, sure do appreciate your trying. Thank you so much, and have a great night.
You too.
All right. Let's go next to Nick. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Nick.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
Fine. And yourself?
Good, good. Let's go Vandy. Let's go Kentucky and Mississippi State.
You got two out of three. You were off to a great start.
All right.
But well done. That's a great effort, Nick. Sure to appreciate it. Have a great night.
You all too. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go next to John. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, John.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Y'all doing all right?
Doing well. Hope you are.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let's try this.
Okay.
Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And Auburn.
Not Auburn. But, John,
okay.
Sure to appreciate it. Thank you very much. Have a great night.
Thank you.
And let's go next to David. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, David.
Hey, guys. Vandy, Kentucky, and South Carolina.
Not South Carolina. But, David, sure to appreciate your trying. Hope you have a great night.
You too.
Again, the question is, it goes from three of the last five times Tennessee traveled to Nashville, they returned home without playing. So in the last six games that Tennessee has played in the Music City, they've won four against three different opponents. Tell me the last three different teams that Tennessee has beaten in Nashville. 865-656-9900, 865-656-9900. Let's go to Danny. Hello, Danny.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Pretty good. How's it going, Dent?
Good, Danny. Hope you are.
I am. Let's go. Kentucky, Vanderbilt, and South Carolina.
Not South Carolina, but Danny, sure do appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. It's Rob who's up next. Hello, Rob.
Hey, guys. How are y'all today?
Doing fine. How are you?
Good. I'm doing all right.
Good.
I was going to go with Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and I'm going to go with Mississippi State because I remember the Admiral Schofield dunk. I think that was a Friday night SEC tournament game, if I remember correctly.
See, Mississippi State would be the fourth team, not the third.
So, okay. All right.
Sure do appreciate it. It's okay. In there. It's in the mix, but it's not in the answer. Rob, thank you very much. And that was an unbelievable dunk. You're exactly right.
Yes,
let's go next to Jack. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jack.
Hey there, fellas. I believe it should be Vandy, Kentucky, and Arkansas.
It's not Arkansas. But, Jack, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Sure do appreciate it. It's the one at the end that is tripping people up. Let's keep rolling. It's Aaron who's up next. Hello, Aaron.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm going to guess Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and Alabama.
It's not Alabama. Tennessee fell to Alabama last year in the SEC tournament, so it is not the Crimson Tide. They were supposed to play Alabama. That was one of the games that didn't happen in the 20 SEC tournament. So, Aaron, thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Sure
do
appreciate it. Let's go next to Mitchell. Hello, Mitchell.
Hey.
Hi.
I want to say Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia.
Not Georgia. But Mitchell, sure do appreciate it. Thank you very much for calling in. Let's see if Jonathan has the answer. Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, guys. How are you all?
Doing fine. Thank you.
All right. Let's go. Let me stop myself. Kentucky, Vanderbilt, and wouldn't it be last year in Florida when Fulkerson got his eye knocked out?
Yes, it would be.
That's what I thought.
Yep. Florida is the most recent team that Tennessee beat in Nashville and then lost in the next round to Alabama. They then had two wins against Vanderbilt in between and the semifinal win over Kentucky. Vince, you were on hand for what was one of the all-time remarkable Tennessee rallies and just such a great moment. Unfortunately, they didn't have anything left really in the tank that next day against Auburn.
Yeah, but it was so exciting, you know, where we were at. There were Tennessee fans everywhere, but there were Kentucky fans too, but a lot of them close to us, and incredible energy, such a great game, high level. Man, that was a ton of fun and quite the ride up until that championship game.
But Jonathan, you nailed it. So Vince, tell him what he's won.
A $25 gift certificate to Proper Popcorn. They're located in 9700 Kingston Pike. They have a new location at 29 Market Square. You can find out more at properpopcorn.com. Proper Popcorn, a classic concept reimagined. It's not just a popcorn shop. It's an experience. Come choose from over 50 non-GMO ingredients, handcrafted small batch popcorn flavor combinations. Create your perfect popcorn treat. They have so many of them, they can't even display all of them. They keep some of them in the back because they have so many. Now you can see the list of them.
Yep.
But, and you can sample them. I mean, it's incredible. So definitely check out properpopcorn.com. Great job.
Yep. Congratulations, Jonathan, on winning. The television voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers, John Michael. In fact, he joins us now via the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. And if you look at the standings, yes, indeed, that is correct. It is Cleveland that is a game and a half out of the top spot in the Eastern Conference, currently shared by the Bulls and the Heat, and a game back behind the Brooklyn Nets, who they just defeated. It's the longest winning streak in the Eastern Conference with five straight wins, and the team that gives up the fewest points of any Eastern team are the Cleveland Cavaliers. John, how are you?
I'm terrific, John. How are you doing?
Doing quite well. And I can't imagine how much fun that you and Mr. Cavalier Austin Carr are having, as well as the entire crew at Bally Sports, just in going one game to the next and just watching this team do all that it's done to put itself in this position.
Well, these, you know, Cleveland Cavaliers have been the darlings of the East. I think it's comparable to what Memphis is doing out West. I mean, these two teams surprising a lot of folks around the NBA. You know, if you would have said that the Cavaliers at this juncture are 9 games over .500 before the season started, I don't think even the biggest Cavs fan would have believed you. But there's something special going on right now in Northeast Ohio. There's no question about it. The MLK Day win over the Nets yesterday was a signature win. And, yes, Kevin Durant wasn't there. But, boy, the energy in the crowd, the electricity, and people are feeling it in Cleveland in terms of what this team is doing. You know, two blossoming stars in Darius Garland and Jared Allen, both of whom people around the Cavs organization feel should be all-star selections, which will be in Cleveland next month. So it's been a wild ride. This team's been consistent. You mentioned the defensive numbers. That's another thing that nobody would have believed. I mean, for years, even stretching back to the finals runs, this Cavalier team was a perennially bottom five defensive team, you know, including the final time that they went to the NBA Finals. But they're third right now, rated third in the NBA. So, you know, in terms of sustainability, this is something that they're happy with, that they think is going to carry over into the second half of the season. And, yeah, here they sit just a game and a half out of first place in the East.
It's been a testament to Coach Bickerstaff and his crew of assistants that they've helped the team get to this position. But you look at Colin Sexton, lost for the season very early into the campaign, and then Ricky Rubio, who was a fantastic addition, playing great ball as a veteran, just doing so many different things that you would hope somebody with his experience would help a young team do. And then he gets knocked out for the season with the torn ACL. What do you think are some of the characteristics about this particular group? I mean, Kevin Love, who at times appeared disinterested last year, I think he is as locked in as anybody, and it looks like he is having a blast this year with this, we'll say, new energy.
Yeah, well, the point about the guards, Sexton and Rubio, is a great one, John. I mean, again, you throw into what they've done this season, he would have said they're going to lose two of the top three guards for the season in the first half. Again, you just think on paper that this team has sunk. And it's been the opposite. I mean, Rubio was a godsend to this team through the first month and a half, but I think his play has really rubbed off on a lot of these guys, including Darius Garland. I mean, the Cavs, you could tell they needed Ricky Rubio to close games over the first 6 weeks or so. You know, these were games where the Cavs were losing last season without, you know, a veteran backup point guard, and they were, you know, winning these games. Ricky Rubio was carrying this team to the finish line late in games. Now Darius Garland's taken over. And when you look at, you know, you mentioned Kevin Love, part of what this team is doing is that they're doing it without any real superstars. I mean, it's been a collective effort. They have 8 players right now, John, averaging in double figures in scoring.
Wow.
You look around the NBA, nobody's doing that right now. You know, it seems to be a different guy every game, and Love has provided some juice off that bench. We haven't talked yet about the leader in the clubhouse and the Rookie of the Year award voting in Evan Mobley, the number three pick out of Southern Cal, who's been, you know, out of this world. He's been everything that they've wanted and much, much more. But again, you know, defensive-minded players like Isaac Okoro, he was the one who had to shut down Kyrie Irving in the fourth quarter. Also DeJounte Murray a couple of games ago, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, just with that bulldog defensive mentality. Lamar Stevens fits into that category as well. Lauri Markkanen was acquired during the offseason from Chicago. He's playing a position, the three, the small forward spot, that he's virtually never played before ever, which allows the Cavs to play big and to buck the, you know, trend in the NBA, which is going small. Cavs are starting 3 7-footers, and they're doing it well, you know, and they're providing problems for other teams with their length. And, you know, we already discussed the defensive numbers. Starting 3 7-footers has a lot to do with that. So it's been a collective effort. You know, it's also, like I said, because of, you know, this team's defensive wherewithal, the Cavs organization feels that this is something sustainable and they can continue to grow as this season continues to unfold.
John, I know it hasn't been a huge sample size because Rajon Rondo has missed some time, but what do you think his long-term impact on this team can be?
I like the pickup, but, you know, it's a good question. But, you know, the idea was for the front office, we lose Rubio, right? And, you know, we're looking for a veteran backup point guard to do what Rubio did, to steer the ship. And Rajon is pretty close. I mean, you know, obviously Rubio's game and Rondo's game, different, right? It looks different. But, you know, the same idea is what the Cavs are looking for out of Rajon. So quickly, again, you credit the front office. They react. You lose Rubio, you need a veteran to fill that spot. They go out immediately and get Rajon Rondo. Now, Rondo's been out for the last couple of games dealing with a sore hamstring. They've had it yesterday, and Brandon Goodwin step in and give some good backup point guard minutes. But they feel that they're going to need Rondo. They're going to need, you know, that veteran steadiness as games continue to get harder. And, as you know, if the Cavs are going to remain where they are in the standings, they become, you know, a team that, you know, is the hunted, right? I mean, they're not the hunters anymore. Teams are going to start hunting the Cavs if their record remains as gaudy. They're going to need as many veterans as possible, not only on the floor, but in that locker room as well.
When you look at the standings conference-wide in terms of playoff positioning, I know we're a long way away from that, but now that they have the expanded version now with those play-in games in, you're now having teams in at or below 500 that are going to get an opportunity there. And I know that was the case with Phoenix, and they made the most of it a couple of years ago. But right now you'd have in the Eastern Conference, everybody's above 500. That's a little bit different. Normally it's the Western Conference. But right now you have Portland in 10th, 18-25. What do you think about those expanded playoff spots in those play-ins?
I like the expansion. I was, you know, I didn't know what I thought about it coming into last season. But for anybody who watched any of those play-in games, they were incredibly entertaining. And, you know, so suddenly I think people liked it. And I think I'm not sure if the league knew that this was going to be a consequence, but including 10 teams made the trade deadline ultra active, you know, because so many teams still felt like they were alive,
mm-hmm.
right? So instead of, you know, just the top eight positions, we're talking about 10 positions. So you can include teams 11 and 12 that think they still have a shot. So I think the concept is a fun one. I really do. And for the Cavs, a team that won just 20-some games each of the last few seasons, you loved it because you felt like it gave you a better chance to get into the playoffs. Now here the Cavs sit at four. So when you look down, there are three distinct tiers now, right? I mean, the first tier is you want to be top six because you want to stay out of the play-in tournament and guarantee yourself a first-round matchup. Second tier is to finish seventh and eighth, which means you're in the play-in tournament, but you only need to win one play-in tournament game to advance. And the other is the 9 and 10 tier, and that's, hey, let's avoid not getting knocked out right off the bat. So there's a lot to look at standings-wise as the season moves into February, then into March, then into April. In terms of, you know, comparing the conferences, out here in the East, we're used to the East being the easy conference, mm-hmm. right, in terms mm-hmm. of the standings and everything else. Right now, the Knicks in the East are in 11th, and they're only six games out of first, to give you an idea how jam-packed things are right now in the Eastern Conference. It is spread out more in the West. The Lakers are at 500, and they sit seventh. You know, the Lakers would be on the outside looking in if they were in the East. So a little bit different, you know, than what we've become accustomed to over the last few seasons. But you're right. I mean, a lot's going to change. But, you know, right now in the East, you can't feel comfortable, you know, considering that there are so many teams right on your tail, so many teams packed right around you in those standings. They're going to have to just keep winning games.
Yeah, that is crazy that the Knicks right now would not be a part of the playoffs. But if they were to go on a seven-game winning streak, it could fall that they could jump to the one seed and host if everything else cooperated. The math, of course, they'd have to climb over 10 teams, but still, that's nuts. One thing, you mentioned Memphis early in our conversation, and what has it been like? You know, you go back to that draft class, and it's a shame that we haven't been able to see Zion Williamson stay healthy, because I don't think there's any question when he's able to go, an unbelievable talent. But what has it been like? You've seen Ja Morant in the Grizzlies twice already this year, and it was two games. Both teams scored over 120 the first time around as the Grizzlies won by 10, and then this last go-around was just a classic slugfest that just back and forth, and again, Morant with what he did defensively as well as clutch offensive shots. What's it been like to watch him blossom and become not just an all-star type performer, but an MVP caliber player?
I love what Jaw's doing. I love it. And Memphis, you know, again, you want to talk about, no, with the exception of Jaw, that's a team creating a lot of problems for a lot of opposing teams without a real superstar. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about collective efforts in Cleveland. It's been the same way in Memphis with Jaw steering the ship. I think you got to give Memphis a lot of credit. I mean, there was a lot of temptation to take R.J. Barrett in that spot. He ended up going third in New York. You know, you look down that list, there's DeAndre Hunter, Jared Culver in there as well. The Cavs in that draft went in and plucked Darius Garland out of Vanderbilt at number five. But you got to credit, you know, Memphis and Ja. Of course, you have to credit him for what he did in the tournament, his final season with Murray State in terms of making his stock rise. And you just got a feeling for what he was doing with Murray State, that when the lights were brightest and he was playing his best, that you knew he had that little extra something. You know, you kind of saw it in college that this might be a kid that just blossoms once he gets to the NBA and gets out there on the national stage a little bit more, and that's what he's done. So I think Memphis, the organization and that team, deserves a load of credit. I mean, they're not going to be overlooked anymore. It's a team that's 9-1 over their last 10 games. They're sitting pretty up in third place in the West, behind two powerhouses in the Suns and the Warriors. So hats off to what the Grizzlies have done. And like I said, when you talk to people around the NBA, it's not too difficult to figure out. While the Cavs have been the darlings, the surprise team of the East, there's no question that it's been Memphis in the Western Conference.
And then what has it been like? Because I know there's the history that's there, but with the back and forth that was Cleveland and Golden State, I know that the league was pulling for somebody like Klay Thompson to be able to get back on the floor. What do you think he's meant to rejoining the Warriors? And boy, they certainly are back in that rarefied air they're used to playing in, aren't they?
Yeah, right. And I think it's just great for the league. You know, Klay came back against the Cavs and was actually great against the Cavs in his return. And while it was, you know, difficult to stomach as a Cavs fan, it's so great for the young man. I mean, the guy suffered two career-altering injuries, you know, that kept him out for each one for over a year. It was just rough to see. And for such a talented young man to come back and have success, hey, let's not forget that even before Klay came back, the Warriors were playing, right? I mean, they were roaring through the Western Conference. He's only going to make them better. Now, they've had a setback. Draymond Green's going to be out for a handful of weeks with something that's been bothering him. I think it was a disc in his lower back that has him out most recently. But once they become full strength, they are dangerous again. And I'll tell you why. I mean, the Cavs had a lot of experience, of course, going to four straight finals with the Warriors. And we see Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and Draymond Green. But what made the Warriors so good was their bench. I mean, their bench would come in and they'd be all over you. And for a couple of seasons, that bench went thin. You know, and that's the way it works in the organizational, you know, cycle of the NBA. You can't keep 10, you know, 12 terrific players around because you can't pay them all. But they're in a situation now where they brought some young kids in that are playing terrific basketball, playing like the Warriors want them to play. So to me, guys, that's what makes the Warriors a real, real threat again. While, yes, it's great to have Klay back with Steph, with Draymond, that supporting cast is much, much better than we've seen over the last few years, and that makes, to me, the Warriors a legit NBA Finals threat.
John, always appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Congratulations on the Cavs being in the position they're in. Good luck. The next assignment, of course, taking a swipe at the Central Division and East leading Chicago Bulls in the Windy City. Safe travels, my friend. We look forward to catching up with you again in the future.
Thanks, John.
Always fun visiting, guys. Take care.
All right. Thank you very much. John Michael, the television voice of the Cleveland Cavaliers, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline as Cleveland, we were talking about it, game and a half out of the top spot in the Eastern Conference.
In the fourth spot, and it's crazy that the Knicks are on the outside looking in, only six games back of number one. John, the Orlando Magic are so bad at 8-37 in 45 games, they've won twice on their home court. Two home wins all season at home. Goodness.
Also great to hear John's perspective, having seen Memphis twice and how good the Grizzlies are. They have the second most wins in the NBA, tied for 31.
Yep.
Only the Phoenix Suns have more than the Memphis Grizzlies. Well, the head coach of the Volunteers, after the team started practice on Saturday and, of course, was out there working again today, Coach Tony Vitello joins us. How are you?
Hey, John. Good. I'm thankful of I'm going to use this as a therapy session, and I'll pretend I'm on the couch. Today's practice wasn't very sharp.
Oh, no.
But it is early, and we've got salaries to earn, so we got to mold these guys into prepared young men by February 18th.
Well, I've got my clipboard. How did that make you feel?
Yeah, there was definitely some feelings out there, but I think, too, you know, yesterday was a day for everyone to celebrate, and Martin Luther King Day. And, you know, it was good that our guys were able to recognize that. We of course, kind of do our own thing with that. But the bottom line is it's one challenge, I think, for all coaches. You know, football, I think you really like a day off when you can get your guys some rest with their bodies because it's such a physical sport. But I think having your guys' attention and then being able to lock in the day after a day off is a challenge we're all familiar with as coaches. And so maybe that had a little bit to do with it. But, again, I think we're in the same boat as everyone else in the country. It's cold. These guys just got done training on their own, which probably wasn't as good as it needs to be. So the race is on to prepare for February 18th, and none of us have that much time to do it.
Tony, in every sport 2 years ago, there wasn't the off-season camaraderie time. And last year, everybody across the board said it was better. Guys have more time to build that chemistry, be around each other, and all that. Have you seen a step up from that or an increase in that even from last year to continue to improve that aspect of your program?
I think so. I think there's definitely been, it's been easier, and there's definitely been things in place that were not there during the times you're speaking of that were a little more difficult. Mm-hmm. But having said that, the circumstances you're dealt in sports are so many different ones. I mean, with ours, it could be weather. With basketball, there's other things that come up. I mean, with soccer, I mean, if the field is a mess, you know, as you look at it as a team, it could either be a detriment to you or it could be something you kind of use to overcome. So it's really what you make of the circumstances, I guess, what I'm rambling on. And I think one thing our guys did during the COVID times was they kind of rallied around the fact that they were going to follow the rules. They were going to put baseball first and politics or anything else aside and basically do what they needed to do to get their work in and then do what they needed to do to be eligible to play. And, you know, they found a way to get close. So it is easier, but I do think anytime you get a set of circumstances, it's important to turn them into a positive.
I know we're still, you know, a month away from the start of the season, but how are you guys from an availability standpoint in starting practice? Any guys healing up and still not full participants from the off season? How are you from that standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were blessed in the fall to deal with a lot of nicks and knacks. Woody, our trainer, Jeff Wood, does such a good job with our guys. We got guys back in action right away at this point. We really don't have anyone that's slowed terribly. We do have one of our pitchers, Seth Halverson, which are, you know, everyone I think has become familiar with him, a transfer portal guy that came over to us from another SEC school. He's not throwing right now, so we'll kind of see what's up with that. Kind of like with Crochet, he'll live on as one of the best examples of all time. Early in the year is not the time to step on the gas pedal. So we're always going to be cautious, and sometimes a guy may be held out of practice or might even be held out of the first opening weekend to be the old better safe than sorry, because ultimately we do need to win as many games as possible, but it's all about preparing for SEC play.
I thought the approach last year was outstanding considering what had taken place the year before, and that was just, hey, play 56. And so much, of course, if you do that, you'll have yourself in a position, you hope, at the end to do exactly what you did, and that's lead a Tennessee team to 50 wins. And I'm just wondering, with the fact that, as you highlighted already, your team did such a good job just managing and making itself available for the chance to play last season, what is it like in the veteran players? What have you seen from them knowing that, okay, they put on the jersey on Saturday as well as through the weekend, knowing they're getting ready for another run to follow up on last year's incredible experience?
I think there's a greater sense of urgency from the older guys. And, you know, it's interesting because sometimes that can be flipped. as a baseball coach, usually the guys that are in the cages the longest or up at the facility first would be the pitchers. And then in the cages example I used, normally it's those freshman hitters that are just swinging like crazy. And sometimes it's actually a detriment. They're kind of overkilling the deal. But it's our older guys right now that I've used as an example. When we've done drills that are, because we're doing group work right now, so you get a bunch of repetitions in a short amount of time. The guys who have shown the greatest sense of urgency and been the most polished in some of these drills or bullpens are Redmond Walsh, Luke Lipsius, and Evan Russell. And I don't think they're not necessarily better people. And those three guys in particular are great examples of guys that are not that skilled. I mean, they are SEC skilled players, but they also, haven't entered pro ball because they're not necessarily tools guys. They're just good ball players. But their approach has been superior to everybody else, and I think it's because it's a mature approach, and it's also one that I think is relative to your comments, is they've got perspective. They get what this is all about and what it takes, and we need to encourage our guys to follow suit, but hopefully our guys kind of do that on their own just by watching those three good examples I just pointed out.
You got to see so many newcomers get into the mix and do what they can do, show what they are capable of during the fall ball and Orange and White World Series. Were you pleased with what was the challenge put in front of the newcomers in managing their own time on their own to their workouts? How do you feel that they came out of December and early January with being ready for the challenge in front of them?
Yeah, you know, the example that sticks out is I'll give you some insight because I haven't even had this conversation with Chris Moore yet, Christian Moore from the Brooklyn area. And he went home and clearly did his work. And he's noticeably more explosive to the point where he needs to recognize that at the plate, because right now he's out in front of every pitch. He's so dang quick to the ball once he makes the decision to go. He needs to realize he's got a weapon there. Any hitter would want more time to evaluate the baseball if they had it. And he's truly got it, and that's just a credit to his work ethic. I mean, you can see the difference in his body, in his bat speed. So he's somebody that stands out. But as a whole, the group, when they do come back, we're not a big conditioning school. We try and do, things that are functional for the baseball field. Mm-hmm. We leave the cardio up to the track and field team here. But we did do a shuttle, and everyone that was a part of the program in the fall, we had a kid transfer in at semester, but everyone that was a part of the program in the fall made their time. And if I'm not mistaken, that's the first time it's ever gone down that way. So I think the guys put in their work, they're focused. But again, what I was whining to you about earlier is we do have a lot of fresh faces, and we do have key positions that are going to be held down by new guys. So our standards need to be high, and, so far they've shown a little rust, or, they're not necessarily where they need to be, but that's the fun part of coaching, and it's fun part of watching a team evolve.
Well, Tony, how rare is it to send a guy home or have him go home and have him become that much more explosive in a fairly short period of time? Is it just guys that are so toolsy like him that can make that jump?
Well, I think he's incredibly gifted. I mean, I don't follow the NFL close enough, so I don't know if this makes sense, but I'm stuck at the Atlanta airport. I never thought I'd have snow issues at the Atlanta airport, but I had that going to and coming back from a talk I had to do. And Odell Beckham, it's like, man, was this guy even playing at the beginning of the year? Or, I know he hasn't had a consistent career the last couple years, and he's doing stuff that no one else can really do on the field last night. And, part of it is he's incredibly gifted. And I think Christian Moore is a kid who's been very blessed with gifts, as are a couple of our other younger recruits that are now on our team. But you got to go home and do the work, because it's two holidays that are gluttonous holidays that you've got to deal with. And, it is rare for a guy to come back and be noticeably more fit or stronger. And hey, there's a couple of examples every year, and I think we've probably got two of them this year, where guys go the other direction. But as a college coach, again, we need to have high standards, but just to be honest, you're just kind of hoping they come back similar to what they were when they left. Mm-hmm. And then again, it's kind of up to us to use this 5 to 6 weeks to prepare as best we can. That's kind of on us.
So how is it going to work? And Will, you've done such a good job of making fans, making your team available to Tennessee baseball fans just to watch the process. What do these next couple of weeks look like in terms of what you're hoping to accomplish?
Well, the NCAA in its infinite wisdom calls this, we're not in season right now, which is insane. Our guys don't get, you know, we're not allowed to give them per diem, even though they're here basically working for the school. And, you know, school's not in session, so no cafeteria and all that.
Wow.
So we're just in group work right now. We can manipulate our hours to where we can mix in small scrimmages or short scrimmages. But really come about the 28th, is when we'll start scrimmaging. Anytime the weather's decent, we're going to be playing. And when we do get to that date where it is full season practice, Sean Barrows, our SID, will tweet out or post on the internet that we're scrimmaging that particular day. And hey, if it's just practice, I mean, you know, I don't think people realize we're out there every day now from about 2 to 5 at a minimum. And it could be group work. It could be the whole team. Again, we got to follow the NCAA hour rule. But we're out there, the stadium's open, you know, our guys, you know, don't have to wear helmets, so the kids can see them. And so we're kind of an open book. And I think what would be really cool, if you're a true or loyal fan, you come out to the stadium, you're going to get an early look at what's going on in left field. And what's going on in left field caused about 3 or 4 of us, I'm not going to tell you which one of us it was, but about 3 or 4 of us started crying dang near when we were talking about it. As a team, because wow, it's just a really cool thing for some of these kids to, you know, they built something. I mean, yeah. I can't imagine what it's like to be Peyton Manning and have a statue. He's probably got multiple, but I know the one in Indianapolis. That's a whole nother level. But to have someone build a structure because of what you did, and you're just a kid, I mean, that's a very impactful thing. And it's not like we got the Atlanta Braves SunTrust Stadium out there or anything, but the porches have doubled, and there's a second tier almost complete out there, and it's a pretty cool sight, John. You're going
to
love it.
Well, can't wait to see it, and we'll definitely make a point to drive by just to catch it, because I saw the pictures as to what it was imagined to be, and that is, again, a testament to everyone's investment.
No doubt, and I think, you know, this, of course, will be what we hope is the temporary structure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an engineering group called Populous that Danny and his folks are working tightly with. And I'm able to be involved in that too, but you know, more permanent plans and some fancier stuff is in the works. But for now, a new MVP room that our MVP seat holders are worthy of, as opposed to what they were kind of putting up with, is in the works. That'll be completed by opening day. A few other small player amenities, which are great for us. And then again, I think that left field deal, you and I are going to be talking about that, I think, for a few weeks. And then when the season starts too, it'll be fun to see who hits the first ever upper deck home run, in left field at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. That'll be one of your little stats that, you know, that you bust out on me and make me look, a lot more foolish.
Oh, well, we'll both be working from the same experience level. I won't be able to get you with that one. That's for sure. And but folks, we'll also have the opportunity to see the team, because we're about 2.5 weeks away from the leadoff banquet, correct?
Yeah, we are. And if I could even backtrack again, scrimmages are an opportunity. This Saturday when we play LSU in basketball, I really hope, you know, fans don't let the weather interfere. That's a, you know, we need to handle business on the basketball court against LSU. And our guys are going to be recognized during that game and go out on the court. And one of the things that'll take place when they're out there is they'll announce the first pitch banquet, as you alluded to, is right around the corner. That's February 5th, and it's at the press room, which if you've never been to the press room, it's an insanely nice venue. I heard Coach Fulmer speak there for a charity event my second year I was here, and it's an incredibly nice venue that they hooked us up with. And that banquet has become a really fun deal. Our guys get dressed up. They're available for pictures or autographs. We've got some great auction items, including some things from the Omaha experience. And then our speakers, sorry to jump the gun. I don't know if you're going to ask this, but Phil Gardner is a Vol legend whose numbers retired on the wall, involved in about as anything you can imagine in the Major League Baseball world. And we'll bring him back for the first time since I've been here. And he's just a great guy to talk to, has great stories. And he's going to visit with us at that banquet. So it should be a blast.
Oh, from Charlie Finley's days with the Oakland A's to the We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates, as well as managing the Houston Astros to the World Series. Scrap iron's loaded with them, but that should be a blast. Coach, there's so much more we could talk about. We'll save it for next time. But thank you for joining us today, and good luck with workouts as we get closer and closer to real time.
Thanks, Tony.
Perfect. Thank you, guys. Y'all have a good one.
You as well. That's Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello joining us on the Stanley Fenton Gates Hotline.
Yeah, always great. Great insight. And I love the little tease about left field.
Yeah.
He wouldn't give up who was emotional and almost crying. He is an Italian like me. So I don't want to out him,
might have touched cloth is right. What you're saying.
He's a prime candidate.
Great to catch up with Tony Vitello. Have John Michael join us before that. If you happen to miss any of our interviews, you can find them where, Vince Ferrara?
99.1thesportsanimal.com, either in the audio section or the show section.
All right. Vince, great job today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John. Enjoyed it.
For Vince, I'm John. Thanks to Sam and Ben. Thanks for listening to Sports Talk.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.